Yet all of this tragedy took place in a public atmosphere of jubilation, a never-ending fiesta of triumphs and anniversaries. For the children of the leaders who were not arrested, there had never been a time of greater joy and energy. The jazz craze was sweeping the country. The musical film Volga Volga came out in 1938, and its tunes were played over and over again in the dance halls. At parties, the Killers danced to the jazz, hailed by Kaganovich as, above all, the friend of the jolly, the musical organizer of our high-spirited youth. Kaganovich wrote a jazz guide leaflet with his friend Leonid Uchosov, the jazz millionaire, entitled How to Organize Railway Ensembles of Song and Dance and Jazz Orchestras, in which he commanded that there should be a jazz band at every Soviet station. They certainly needed cheering up. It was truly a time of huge hope and joy for the future, remembers Stepan Mikoyan. We were perpetually excited and happy. The new metro opened with its chandeliers, the giant Moskva Hotel, the new city of Magnitogorsk, and all sorts of other triumphs. The propaganda machine sung of heroes of labor like the superminer Stakhanov. Voroshilov and Yezhov were hailed as knights in ballads. The movies had names like Tales of Aviation Heroes. Life was full, reminisces Andreev's daughter Natasha. Not everyone was living under oppression. We knew, as children, the first thing to be done was to make people strong, to make a new man and educate the people. At school, we learned how to use different tools. We went into the countryside to help with the harvest. No one paid us. It was our duty. The NKVD were heroes, too. They celebrated their 20th anniversary at a Bolshoi gala. Beneath flowers and banners of Stalin and Yezhov, Mikoyan, in a party tunic, declared, "Learn the Stalinist style of work from Comrade Yezhov, just as he learned it from Comrade Stalin." But the crux of his speech was, "Every citizen of the USSR should be an NKVD agent." The country celebrated the anniversary of Pushkin's death, as well as the anniversary of the Georgian poet Rustaveli. Stalin was deliberately fusing traditional Russian culture with Bolshevism as Europe lurched closer to war. The Soviets were now fighting the fascists by proxy in the Spanish Civil War, sparking a craze for Spanish songs and Spanish caps, blue with red edging on the visor, and big berets, tilted at a rakish angle. Women wore Spanish blouses. If Tomorrow Brings War was one of the most popular tunes. All the children of the leaders wanted to be pilots or soldiers. The magnates never discussed the terror before the children. The reluctance to reveal one's thoughts even to one's son was the most haunting sign of these times, remembered Andrei Sakharov, the physicist. Yet the children naturally noticed when their uncles and family friends disappeared, leaving unspeakable and unaskable voids in their lives. The Mikoyan children heard their parents and uncles whispering about the arrests in Armenia, but their father sometimes could not stop himself exclaiming, "I don't believe it." They whispered behind the kitchen door. Whenever his wife asked him something dangerous, Mikoyan replied, "Shut up." Sergo Arjanikitsa quietened his wife with a firm, "Not now." Parents were constantly going for walks in the woods or round the Kremlin. The inhabitants of the house on the embankment, the hideous luxury building for younger leaders, including the Khrushchevs and Stalin's relatives like the Svanitsas and Redins, waited each night for the groan of the elevators, the knock on the doors, as the NKVD arrived to arrest their suspects. As Trifonov relates in his novel House on the Embankment, every morning the uniformed doorman told the other inhabitants who had been arrested during the night. Soon, the building was filled with empty apartments, doors ominously sealed by the NKVD. Khrushchev worried about the gossiping women in his family, furious when his peasant mother-in-law spent her time chattering downstairs, knowing well how loose talk cost lives. Parents kept bags packed for prison or pistols under their pillows, ready to commit suicide. The cleverer ones made plans in case they were arrested. The mother of one child showed her how to gather warm clothes and take her little sister to a distant relative in the countryside. The children noticed frequent house moving because every execution created a vacant apartment and dacha, which were eagerly occupied by aspirational survivors. Stalin exploited this way of binding the leaders to the slaughter. Dyshinsky was the most morbidly avaricious of all. He had always coveted the dacha of Leonid Serebrikov. Days after Serebrikov's arrest, the procurator demanded the dacha for himself, and 600,000 rubles to rebuild it. This vast sum was approved on the very day Dyshinsky cross-examined Serebrikov in the Radek trial. The souls of former owners, wrote Svetlana Stalin, seemed to linger within those walls. We were never afraid in 1937, explains Natasha Andreev, because she believed absolutely that the NKVD only arrested enemies. In the Mikoyan household, their adopted son, Sergei, went through all the family photograph albums, erasing the faces of enemies as they were arrested and shot, a horrible distortion of a child's colouring book. Even if they did not grasp the randomness of death, the children were aware that it was ever present. At school, their teachers pretended nothing was happening, while the danger was just dawning on the young people, who saw their friends being repressed. Whenever a parent was arrested, their children were removed mysteriously from Svetlana's class, so that she, who was treated like a Tsarevna, did not have to rub shoulders with the kin of enemies. Sometimes friends were actually arrested at teenage parties in front of all the others. Vasily Stalin and Stepan Mikoyan were carousing at a party given by one of their friends at the military academy when the doorbell rang. A man in plain clothes asked to speak to Vasily Stalin, who came to the door where he was told, as a sign of almost feudal respect, that the NKVD had arrived to arrest a boy at the party. Vasily and Stepan watched from the window as the Chekists put the boy into a black car as a member of a teenage anti-Soviet group. He was never seen again.